Thank you for listening to Internet Boyfriends.
She's jealous, isn't she?
No, I don't think so.
I don't push to the point of insanity. I don't think I'm ever going to prolapse.
We are really bad on staying on top. I fucking apologize to any listeners that think that we're organized in any fucking way.
The Nazis are back, and they're flying over, about to bomb fucking Toronto, duck and cover.
Krampus! Like,
yeah, like, I wish I had a better way of describing that so I didn't sound like a fucking racist. Like,
it's terrible!
As long as I get a laugh and you get a laugh, I think we've been successful, so.
That was my grandmother, you son of a bitch! She didn't splatter like a bag of meat!
I'm telling you what I learned from television and Wikipedia.
She really likes how I say audio.
I know how the internet works.
Internet boyfriends.
What the hell do I say?
It's not like, who cares?
I care. I'm trying to be more like professional.
Yeah, you can be professional and consistent. It doesn't have to be like calm, clear intro. That's all you need.
It's more about the animation than it is about the actual message, which is welcome back to another Internet Boyfriend.
Woo-hoo!
I am Joey. With me is Ryan, the Ryan Reynolds to my Blake Lively.
Does that mean I'm trapped in a coffin in Iraq? So the summer's over. And as usual, my summer consisted of the Fantasia Film Festival, just for laughs. I went to California this summer. The Fantasia is where I will start, because we were just talking about unique movie experiences. And Fantasia, for those of you not in the know, is possibly the world's best genre film festival. I don't feel too awkward saying that. They have lots of like Asian cinema stuff, they have lots of weird horror things, and they have lots of sort of mind-bending, weird, trippy things. Like last year I saw a movie called You Are Here, which is sort of a filmic version of Assorted Neuroscience Principles, which I'm dying to get in some sort of legitimate copy, but it has disappeared since then. Like, I saw Tucker and Dale vs. Evil before it came out everywhere else there. I saw Clown before it got wide release. But this year, I saw some bad movies and some good movies. Some good movies were Juan of the Dead. Which,
you were fucking super excited about that.
It's so good. It might be better than Shaun of the Dead.
That's high praise.
It is. I love Shaun of the Dead. Juan of the Dead is set in Cuba.
Yes.
With these sort of poor scam artist Cubans fighting zombies. And the Cuban media is always saying it's how it's dissidents and how it's America trying to disrupt the wonderful government that is the Castro regime.
Yes.
And which cracked us up. And there's also all sorts of crazy zombie kills. There's one where the crew is being surrounded by zombies, and all of a sudden this car comes out of nowhere, shoots a harpoon into a pole that's behind them, and then drives in a circle with the rope at neck level. So it just decapitates a circle
really
of zombies.
Of every movie,
it's not spoiling. I'm not saying what happens at the end. It's just saying one specific kill. There's lots of very cool kills. It's an awesome movie. If you can ever get a chance to see it, see it. I saw a really cool He-Man documentary about the debate about who actually created He-Man. And really, it was just...
Is there really a debate about who created
He-Man? Apparently there is. Some guy wrote a book about it. He was the guy that came up with the first idea of it, but he wasn't into the concept art, and Mattel had, like, it's really just the company came up with He-Man. It wasn't, like, one specific dude came up with the entirety of He-Man by itself. But there are two people that worked for Mattel at the time that contest that they are the creators of He-Man, and it was a really cool documentary, and I appreciated that it did not take a side. It sort of just told the story of what it was and let you make your own decisions, which is what real good documentaries do, I think.
I would agree.
There was another good one, Despite the Gods, which is about Jennifer Lynch, who's famed for doing Boxing Helena, and she's the daughter of David Lynch.
Yes.
And she was making this movie in India, and it's a documentary about her attempts and struggles making the movie in India. I saw some cool Asian weird horror things about, like, everyone started to die in Japan for no reason. And it was a documentary about that, a movie about that. Not documentary, because that'd be weird. A movie about that. And, like,
it's
all
Tuesday
the...
Tuesday in Japan.
And it was like a comedy, sort of, because, like, everyone died in really cheesy and ridiculous ways. But, like, it was pretty much just me and a couple of friends who actually enjoyed it, and the rest of the audience was like, meh, I don't know about this. Some people walked out.
Opposed to the other movie you saw, which you didn't like.
Ace Attorney.
Else loved.
I saw Ace Attorney, which, me and my other, my usual Fantasia buddy Melissa were there, and we were both like, I've played a little bit of Ace Attorney, so I knew what I played was like, oh, this is the beginning of the movie, so I assumed the whole movie was basically the first Ace Attorney game. And every time something happened that was clearly a throwback to the game, the whole audience was like, woo! And I can't... Exactly. And they had like... it was so stupid. I mean, it wasn't stupid. Like, it was fine, but it's Takeshi Miike, who's a fantastic director, and I wanted more than just fan service, and it was
really... Gotta make money, bitch.
Okay, come on. He's making money. And it was really just an hour and a half or whatever it was of fan service. It was disappointing.
Maybe it's just the film version of Making It Rain. Like, you just...
I don't know. I was disappointed. I saw Space Battleship Yamato, which was a really...
What the fuck is that?
It's an anime and maybe a manga. This was the film live-action version. It was a really good sci-fi story. I want to go check out the anime now to see how it compares. But if you get a chance to watch it...
I have notes, because I'm writing in the margins of my notes all these movies. Like, oh man, I got to fucking
see that. All right, let me... I actually have it on my calendar.
You Are Here definitely it sounds awesome.
You Are Here, if you ever get a chance to see it, see it. It's a really weird, trippy thing, but it doesn't exist anymore, as far as I can tell. And this year I saw Paranorman as the Canadian premiere, because they first showed it at Fantasia, and it was Paranorman is awesome. And a new Simon Pegg movie called A Fantastic Fear of Everything, which was great. Yeah, it was really good. Yeah. So yeah, I saw lots of good movies. I said most of them. I'm going to stop talking about movies.
No, what?
There was also Love in the Buff, which was a sequel to the movie Love in a Puff, which is a really funny Hong Kong movie it's like a romantic comedy from Hong Kong, and romantic comedies aren't always very good, but these two are very good, and I'm not sure why it's called Love in the Buff, aside from the rhyming, because there's no nudity. I also saw The Kick, which was this family of martial artists that fight crime, which was fun.
Fuck yeah.
I saw a Spanish cartoon called Wrinkles about living in an old folks' home,
Okay. Which
was good. I saw some non-Fantasia movies like Beasts of the Southern Wild and To Run with Love. I saw all sorts of stuff. It was a busy week. That was my movies, more or less. Any other movies? Yeah, that's all the movies.
Said, I'm getting fucking ideas of shit to watch on Netflix, because that's pretty much my movie viewing experience.
The two which I saw were Ace Attorney and Schoolgirl Apocalypse, which is my biggest disappointment. Because
Exactly!
Really? The title sounds awesome, but it was so poorly made. Like, there was horrible Foley, there was some, like, this. The sound in general was bad, it was just, it didn't work.
Okay.
But yeah. That was my movies.
Just
Less was great. I saw a ton of stuff. I saw John Panette. I saw Aziz Ansari. I saw Chelsea Peretti open for him, and she was great. I saw Hannibal Buress. I saw the fucking Muppets.
What?
I saw the Muppets. I saw a real-life Muppet show, and I could have died then and died happy. To be fair, they're probably going to tour it, is what I've heard is the rumor.
Okay.
So you might be able to see it in New York. So in Just for Laughs, at least, they had five comedians. And so they had the way that it was a gala, and the galas at Just for Laughs work with, there's a host, which is usually a comedian, but sometimes it's just like a random celebrity. Niles from Frasier was a gala host once. Kevin James, I think he wasn't actually a comedian, but he's not really a comedian, was a host once. Like, it's usually just someone that's known for comedy in some way.
Yeah.
Or known for being like, so usually it's a comedian, but sometimes it's just a TV guy that's whatever.
Someone from the stage, if you will.
Yeah, someone from stage or stand-up stage or screen. And in this case, it was the Muppets Gala, because it was the 30th anniversary of Just for Laughs. So they were like going all out. So the Muppets came to Just for Laughs. Plastic Zara had a seat on the floor. It's crazy. I mean, I saw the Muppets. I mean, the weird thing is, because it was on stage, so, like, you see the people. If you look on stage, you see the people holding the Muppets, looking at things, talking to the monitor so they know what they're doing and where they're pointing and stuff. And, like, so you see, like, there's an opening sketch. They did a song, like, where Sam the Eagle had all sorts of wrong facts about Canada. The Swedish chef came out and made poutine and had heart attacks repeatedly. What's his name? Crazy. The TNT guy.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It might be whatever. The TNT guy was like, he kept shocking him to bring him back to life. They sang Rainbow Connection at the end. Oh.
So they kept it surprisingly G-rated they could have gone.
It was very G. It was definitely like all ages. We specifically picked, there was two shows. We picked the 10 o'clock show, hoping it was maybe a little less family-friendly, but it was totally family-friendly. Tommy Jonigan was the best comedian we saw during that gala.
Never heard of him.
He was on Last Comic Standing. He's pretty funny.
Okay.
So because we had this year for Just for Laughs, they had this thing called the Passport, and where you could pick three shows for I think it was $100. And we picked the Muppets Gala, Handel Burris, and the live WTF taping, because those are three we really wanted to see. But with the Passport, you also got one free show a day. So because we had one free show a day, we saw at least one show every day, and every day we had the Muppets, the Handel Burris, we saw two shows, because we got the one free show extra. So we saw Marc Maron stand up, and then we saw WTF. We saw Handel Burris, and then we used the thing to get the XXX Just for Laughs Gala. I won tickets to Jim Gaffigan, so I saw Jim Gaffigan. Like, nice. Unfortunately, because we saw so much stuff, we saw Godfrey, I think, five times. I saw, what's his name, the Irish guy. Anyway, I saw him two or three times, but thankfully, he was hysterical each time. And what's his name?
I'm fucking drawing a blank on his name, as I'm fucking tend to do, but yeah, I know who he's talking about. That's the guy, because you came home and you're like, oh man, I fucking saw this guy. And the reason I know him is because for a long time on GChat, I had one of his quotes up on my away message.
You
whatever,
did. And it was it's true. It's true. You did.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was.
I remember that.
The thing about
Tommy Tiernan.
Like, what would Jesus do? And he's like, "What would Jesus do?" Like, it's a fictional character. Like, well, I'm just asking, what would Yoda do?
Yeah. Tommy Tiernan is his name.
Tommy Tiernan.
He formerly had the world record for the longest comedy set. I think he went for 26 hours or something. But yeah, so it was a great comedy week. So it was Fantasia, then a week of comedy, then back to Fantasia. And the WTF, which hasn't been released yet, was the craziest thing. Marc Maron got tackled by one of the comedians. The entire audience sang Alouette.
Who were the other comedians?
There was Godfrey, one of the times you saw him. Nikki Glaser, Sean Cullen, Mike Wilmot, and another guy whose name escapes me right now. He's done it 2 years in a row now, Just for Laughs, and last year was not as good. He had a ventriloquist on, and Mike Ward, who's a comedian, a Quebecois French comedian who I don't like very much, and Jeremy Hott, who I don't like very much usually.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as good last year, but this year, I don't know how he's going to edit it down. It was a total, like, madhouse. I don't know if you've heard Sean Cullen on, like, Doug Loves Movies, he's on there semi-regularly, or other things, you know he's high energy, to say the least. And a big improv guy, and he goes all over the place, and it was nuts. As a spectator, a ton of fun, but it was nuts. But yeah, so that was Just for Laughs. That was.
And what was the third thing you went to?
California, which is good.
Isn't there another festival?
Nope.
No jazz festival or anything.
There is a jazz festival. I did not go to it at all. I did see some concerts, but I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't go to a jazz fest, just separately.
How was California?
California was awesome. California was for once sunny. The last couple times we went, it rained.
Only you could go to California, the motherfucking desert.
We met up with mostly Michelle's family, but we saw one night we went out with my Paper Keg West co-host, Cameron Rice, David Campo, people on Twitter that like we both sort of know, a comic book girl, LA Rabbit, and we went to Umami Burger. Slurmo was supposed to come, and if you listen to this, I'm still a little upset at you, Bob, for not showing up.
I'm fucking upset. This is kind of weird because
to be fair, it's a hike and a half for him to get downtown from where he is, apparently. But still, come on, come from Canada, anyway. But yeah, Umami Burger, delicious.
Yeah.
One of the best burgers I've ever had. We ate lots of good food because that's what we do. We're in the city.
That's what most people do when you go on vacation. Generally, you eat.
Yeah, but that's like it's like we went to Chicago. Chicago was like everything we did was sort of in between. Like we just tried to kill time between eating places. It was really a food centric quest.
If you're going to Chicago and you're not eating good food, kill yourself.
Yeah, you're doing it wrong.
It's such a great city for food.
Yeah. But so yeah.
To explain something to people who might not know, or I don't know why you wouldn't know this, but usually I'm up Ryan's ass about every little detail about everything. I think generally I tend to be pretty in your business all the time about what's going on, and I really didn't get any sort of update about California at all. I mean, not that you didn't give one,
nothing super exciting happened. Like we ate some good food. It wasn't nothing aside from Umami Burger slash. Well, we technically went to Umami Katessen, which is Umami Burger plus a cured meat thing and a Jewish deli all in one.
All right,
and. But yeah, so that was the one thing that was like the super good food. Everything else was good. Like we didn't eat nothing was bad that we ate, but it wasn't like Chicago exciting. There was no hot dogs or Frontera or Girl and the Goat type thing.
Yeah.
Nothing blew my hair back.
Yeah, but you met all sorts of people that I am interested in. I generally pretty much the only person I know. I know one person out of or
well, I met them. I met aside
I've had
from
separate conversations with one person of all the people that you've met.
Aside from Rabbit, I've met everyone before. Like I met them last time we were in California, so it wasn't like I met them for the first time. I was sort of seeing them again, which is always fun. Like it was not to minimize it in any way. Like and I've met I met Bob in Chicago, so I've seen Bob before. So it's not like I've never. It was not my one chance to meet Bob, but still.
I am really elusive compared to you, aren't I?
Well, yeah, I actively try to see people. You actively try to avoid people.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
especially since you live an hour from the city, from New York City, you could easily see a dozen people we both know on Twitter on a semi-regular basis, and you don't.
All right, but the thing is that. It's not just that I could see people. It's that when I'm around people, it's not that people don't remember me. I guess it's just that I tend to. I'm big into having conversations with one person or having.
That's totally fair.
Yeah.
If only could meet up with one person in the city with your. I know it's impossible, but
yeah. Specifically, I got an email from Devin, and he was like, "Hey, I'm coming down for New York Comic Con. Are you going?" I was like, "No, Ryan's not going, so I refuse to go." And yeah, again, whatever. He said like, "Oh, this time I really want to meet you because like we had sort of kind of were introduced to each other and like waved from across the room or something." He's like, "I actually want to hang out and talk and
yeah."
Whatever.
Devin come, like, did Devin come to the bar after?
He did. He
oh,
was
he was with Colin, though, or something, was it? Or you were with Colin, and he was then Devin was me.
Yeah. You right. fell into a bush.
That was bar number two.
This is Dr. Teeth, and I was like, "Hey, buddy, what's going on?" And
No. You were gone when I fell into a bush. Don't misrepresent this at all.
You fell into at least 16 bushes, as far as I'm concerned. Oh, many, many bushes.
It was an even dozen. Come on.
Yeah. All right. Fine. Whatever. So, I don't know. It's just, I guess people... I don't know. I'm not. Because another thing too is okay. So Angela is the one person out of that group that I've actually had like a side conversation with.
Yeah.
I've never met her, but I will talk to her, and she's fucking nice, and I like talking to her.
Angela, I spent some actual time with, like because Angela's friends with Michelle on Twitter too. So we hung out for the day before we had to leave, and then come back for the larger meetup. So we went and got what did we have for lunch?
Food.
We did have food. And then we had ice cream sandwiches. So we hung with Angela for a little while. What did we have for
just
lunch?
Rub in my face, why don't you?
What did we have for lunch? I can't remember what we had for lunch.
I'm lactose intolerant. So
they probably have sherbet sandwiches.
I would never eat a sherbet sandwich.
Sherbet is delicious.
I don't eat dessert food.
Sherbet is delicious. I would often choose sherbet over ice cream.
You're fucking weird.
I love fruit sherbet over random ridiculous sweetness. That's all.
I'm just trying to backpedal.
What the fuck do we have for lunch?
I'm trying to make it seem like I don't mind talking to people, because I feel like the more that we have these podcasts, I'm sort of portrayed as a hermit, because I kind of am.
Well, then what did you do this summer?
I have conversations with people, usually.
What did you do this summer? Oh, also, following up on a previous podcast, I completed Weight Watchers, lost 50 pounds, and then went to California and ate like a champ. But, so yeah, what did... So what did you do this summer? I'm going to keep thinking of what I had for lunch with Angela.
I like that you're now that I've gotten on this point that I'm a hermit, you're really trying to...
Oh, we went to food trucks with Angela. Went to food trucks with Angela. We had fried chicken from Ludo Lefebvre's truck, who's famous from Top Chef, and I bought a t-shirt, which was not quite what I imagined when I bought it, but I still wear it. That's
how
what we
so?
Had. Well, because his food truck has like a stylized rooster as the logo.
Okay.
I thought that would be on the front of the shirt, but it's one of those where it wraps around like the side of you, like it's like around like my ab level right side as opposed to in the front.
Yeah,
which is I was just a little annoyed, but yeah. So that's what we had. We had food trucks with Angela, and then we got back, piled into the car, and drove to get ice cream and snacks at a delicious ice cream place.
It's really interesting that a guy that makes food for people has a t-shirt that is at gut level. Where generally no one wants anyone looking whatsoever. Like that's
well,
as a t-shirt, you really want to keep people like, you know.
As a re-minted thin man again, I don't know how it would apply to a fat person. But maybe being on the side detracts from the gut. It like pulls your eyes to the side as opposed from this framed belly. I don't know. I haven't seen one on a big guy.
We gotta find somebody in the wild wearing one of these shirts. Anyways.
So what did you do this summer?
Yeah.
Much less interesting, I'm sure, than what I did, but still. I hear you have a new obsession. Oh, okay, go ahead. I was looking at her IM.
Oh, you're such an asshole. What are you gonna say? What are you gonna say? Just fucking what do you got?
Well, we're not, I have nothing. Go on. What's your new obsession?
No, you said you had something to say.
I don't have anything to say. I have nothing to say. I was just looking at the IM. I was gonna go, oh, and I was gonna say we could talk about your dreams of sushi, but we don't really have time now because I've been rambling.
We totally have time because I'm gonna be very quick.
Okay.
Because I think my little thing sort of goes into that. So I guess over the summer I've been really getting, well, actually, because I technically get a whole podcast to myself because we're gonna be talking about this like in a week or two, or hopefully in a week or two when to keep these edited and out on time. I've been obsessed with polymaths and geniuses, if
right.
you will, or people who are experts at things, because a while, not too long ago, I think it was really summed up perfectly.
Yeah, but, okay, let's be fair. Polymaths are not experts at single things. Those are very different kinds of things.
No. I have a good way of explaining this because there's actually somebody that did a really good job of explaining this graphically.
Should we say what a polymath is for anyone who doesn't know? Because we learned that some people don't know what polymath is.
It's a Renaissance man. It's just you can't say Renaissance man anymore because people are, you know, that's sexist, I guess. So
Renaissance person.
Whatever, it's a polymath is.
And not what's the that? Renaissance person, and not the, I think it's Danny DeVito movie.
Well, yeah, it is a Danny DeVito movie, but
I saw
the
Renaissance theaters.
Person doesn't really. I think because another thing too is that when you say Renaissance person, I guess maybe people are trying to get away from that because the Renaissance is sort of a nebulous period of time in which it's debatable if any person from that, like, it really.
And really, they're just talking about
Da Vinci.
Yeah, exactly. They're talking about Da Vinci when they talk about Renaissance men, whether it's founded or not. That's what they're talking about. The image we have of Da Vinci is an artist and an engineer and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, but he's not.
I know.
Here's the thing. When you talk about a polymath, if you really want to get into... Okay, so when I talk about polymaths, I'm talking about someone who's like John von Neumann. He only lived till he was 53 to start. I want to make this clear. This dude lived till he was 53 years old.
That's 20 years more than Jesus.
Wait. He did way more than Jesus. Dude was...
Oh, no. Did he die for my sins? Come on.
I think he did. I think he did die for your sins, considering
he was an asshole.
I believe it's fair to say he was one of the major founders of computer science, because he's specifically
my sins. Holy shit, his known for list is huge.
Yes, I'm actually going to go over some of this, because I had to write it down, but I do know some of this, I just have a really bad memory. He was a genius, fucking amazing guy. Lots of people know him because he's responsible for just von Neumann architecture. His name is John von Neumann, if anyone wants to Google or Wikipedia this guy.
N-E-U-M-A-N.
Theory, min-max theorem, quantum logic, helped with the atomic bomb, and he helped with the atomic bomb, and he came up with mutually assured destruction at the same time. He was a physicist. He was into quantum everything.
Computer viruses.
He could compute things in his mind. Fucking insanely smart. Photographic memory.
So he's probably autistic.
I don't know because I don't look at that side.
Yeah, yeah.
All I know is that I'm 28 years old, or almost 28, and I've made zero atomic bombs. So I feel
it's frowned upon now.
Yeah, but I mean, still, I mean, it's something you're supposed to have on your resume, isn't it?
It's not on mine. I've done okay. I mean, you can put it on yours. If they're not going to test you on it.
Are you sure?
You could say, like, built a sample atomic bomb in my garage. Or
yes.
Car hold, however you Americans call it. And then if they call you on it, like, oh, I can't, it's state secret, sorry, you know how it is. That's how it goes.
In order to hammer that point home, I have to be shot by Libyans
to make them believe. Too soon.
Why is that too soon?
Because some dude was just shot by Libyans today!
It's a Back to the Future reference. I can do it anytime I want.
I wasn't sure you were talking about the guy that was like, what's his name? Oh, what's his fucking name?
I know who you're talking about.
The guy that was shot today.
I know. Fuck off. This is coming out next week. Nobody will know about it.
Oh, that's true.
Whatever.
I'm sure Lindsay will do something stupid by then.
So anyways, so I've become obsessed with geniuses, experts, all these sorts of things because Zach Wiener, the guy who does Saturday Morning Breakfast comics, fantastic comic, by the way, he explained that everybody has multiple lives in their actual lifetime. If you think that you live once and then you expire, that's totally not how it is. Really what it is you're constantly going through these cycles of every, you know, 8 or 9 years where you're becoming someone who could possibly become a genius, or you could possibly become an expert level.
Is his last name Wiener or Wiener Smith?
It's Wiener Smith now because he got married.
Right, I thought so. They both changed the names.
Yes, they both changed the names. So it's Zach Wiener Smith, yeah.
I know that. Sorry, this is a slight tangent. Because they have a podcast called The Weekly Wiener Smith.
Yes.
Which spun out of science, sort of.
Yes.
And the quantum physicists. No, what is it called? Titanium physicists.
Okay.
Because Ryan Haupt, friend and iFanboy writer, is the science sort of guy, so I followed them to, now I know who the Weekly Wiener Smith is. That's how I knew who he is, because I don't read Sunday Morning Breakfast Cereal.
Saturday you should.
Morning. I know! I see it occasionally when it pops up on my RSS feed and it's shared by someone else, and I like it then, but I don't read it regularly. Sorry. Random tangent, for no reason other than the name drop, which is an asshole-ish of me.
I think that this is a great name-dropping podcast, so that's what we do here, is we name-drop and we promote things and we say things
but
on our way to...
If you like science, you should absolutely listen to Science Sort Of and the Titanium Physicists. I haven't listened to Weekly Wiener Smith, so I can't test that yet, but those both are very good and enjoyable.
I think that generally anything that Zach Wiener Smith does is good shit. Good shit. You should check it out.
Well,
okay,
he's been on the podcast, but he's not regular on the podcast. Kelly's regularly on the podcast.
Okay, I will clarify some of that in a later podcast, because all of that sort of pertains to something I'm going to say in a week or two or whatever. So in my search to research experts and things like that, I got to find Jiro Ono, who is, if you want to explain.
He might be the first person in Japan to get 3 Michelin stars. He's commonly considered the greatest sushi chef in the world.
Yes.
He's been on No Reservations, and recently, which we confirmed after we started watching the thing, so I'd seen him before apparently, but he was recently in a documentary called Euro Dreams of Sushi, which is one of the best documentaries I've ever seen in my life.
I would agree. Yeah.
It's really, while it's about Hiro and his sushi shop, his family, and that aspect, it's really about what it takes to be the best in the world at something. And what toll it takes on you, and what toll it takes on your family, and all that stuff. I feel it's as much about that as it is specifically about Hiro.
I really wish they would have gone into more about his past. Specifically, does it really take, because he's been doing it for 75 years.
Yes. He's been doing it since he was 9. Yeah. He's 80-something now.
Outside of, guy's been doing it for 75 years. Arguably, someone who's been doing something for 75 years should be an expert, no matter how smart you are or how great you are at it. Because it's 75 years of iterative work of where every day you're coming in and you're saying, what he does is he goes, how can I make this process better?
Most people don't do that. Most people just go and do their job.
Really?
Yes. I have no data to back that up, but I feel most people who go into work, I'm a computer programmer. I don't go every day thinking, how can I be a better programmer today? I just want to get my job done so I can have a bourbon and watch some TV afterwards or read a comic book or whatever. I don't go every day trying to improve my, I try to become a better person every day, but I don't specifically try to improve my professional skills every day.
Okay. That's right.
And I don't even know if most people try to improve themselves every day, but I think most people think of a job as a job, and they go in, and it's what they do to make money so they can live and do what they really like to do. Whereas Hiro, and both of his sons, it seems, are specifically striving to be the best they can possibly be.
Consciously,
and always, and even after 7.5 years, Hiro is still I'm not the best, I haven't reached perfection yet, what is perfection? And that's a big question in it, and how do you reach it, if it's possible? And he's constantly striving and pushing the boundaries, and he's found new ways to prepare all sorts of kinds of sushi. He's found replacements for fish that have more or less disappeared because of overfishing. And this is a restaurant with 10 seats.
Yeah.
10 seats. Admittedly, the chef's tasting menu is $300+.
It's something like $15 to $18 for one piece of sushi, if you break it down that way.
And I'm a very recent, this is another summer thing I learned, I discovered sushi, and if I had the money to dispose of, I don't have $300 to throw on a meal necessarily, that takes, I think he said half an hour to eat.
Yeah.
More than the money is I don't have a palate refined enough to appreciate it enough to warrant the money. I haven't eaten enough sushi in North America, most people who eat sushi, it's rolls. It's not real nigiri or whatever. It's fucking California rolls all the time. But It's.
I hope not. Jesus.
Come on, let's be fair. Most people eating sushi are eating rolls, and whether it's not just it's not necessarily just California rolls. I'm sure they're having like avocado rolls and stuff too. But like, it's most people are eating rolls because it's tasty, it's easy, it's not like a piece of raw fish on a bed of rice that you can't like. People don't.
Most people don't live by the ocean. So.
Yeah, that's true too. Like, but like, it's hard to explain. I don't even really understand how cutting a piece of fish and putting it on a piece of rice, on a hunk of rice, can be so drastically different from one restaurant to another. And I already know that, like, there's some chains, like, I don't know if you have Sushi Shop in the States, but, like, Sushi Shop here or, like, some other sushi chains that I've had, and there's a place around the corner called Nagoya, which is delicious. And there's a noticeable improvement in the quality of food between Nagoya and Sushi Shop, even though it's still a piece of raw fish on rice, somehow. And I don't quite understand how that works or how they do that, but watching this movie makes you appreciate, like, it's always, I have no idea who said this, and I'm not sure of the exact phrasing, but it's something in the realm of, it's always interesting watching someone who's an expert at something do what they're an expert at.
Yes.
Like, if you, someone who's like, Yuru is an expert at sushi, so it's fascinating watching him make sushi. Watching, like, that's why Top Chef is interesting to me, because it's interesting watching people who are excellent chefs pair and cook food. And it's probably the same for all sorts of different things. Maybe not programming, because that's someone typing, but, like, any sort of outwardly creative thing, or even, like, a carpenter. Like, I mean, a carpenter is creative, too, but, like, if you're watching a master craftsman build a cabinet, I would watch that all the time. And I do. I watch Norm Abrams make stuff regularly on PBS.
Yeah.
Because it's fascinating watching someone who's really good at something do what they're really good at.
But okay, so not to, I don't want to spoil the documentary, I guess, but the reason why a piece of fish and some rice is what it is in his restaurant is because he is only dealing with the people who sell the best. He's dealing with the fish experts. He's dealing with the rice experts. Everything has to be at an extremely high level to meet his standards, and that's the thing. I think that's what is, whether it's crafting wood or if it's programming or whatever it is, that's what I've become obsessed with, is that I'm really into people's passion. I want to see why, if you really like wood, how do you know what a good piece of wood is? How do you know what a bad piece of wood is? How do you know, how do you craft standards? Because I think that's the thing is, I don't know where it came from, but I'm really trying hard to read over 200 books this year, and so somewhere in all of that there was a quote that said, when the world is trying its best, evolution and all these things, all these little mechanisms the world has, biological, spiritual, whatever you want to say, it's all trying to make people come alive. And the way that you want to come alive is by having that moment of when an expert meets the perfect block, I guess you could say, to sculpt this, when the sculptor, when the expert sculptor meets the perfect block, or the Jiro meets the perfect piece of fish and rice, and bowl of rice, whatever it is, when you see someone that really is so passionate and has just so much love for whatever this thing that they're doing, because it really takes unbelievable dedication to do that, to come in every day 75 years and say, I want to do better than yesterday. Because that's what's that little piece right there, because people always say, like, I want to be more creative. It's like, yeah, well, fucking well, good, whatever, you know.
We'll save that for a couple weeks from now, a little bit.
Yeah. But that'll be another day. But the thing is that it's not about creativity, it's about that iteration. We had today there was the Apple 5 fucking thing announcement, and people were complaining about how the screen size, they're like, oh, the screen size still is like 3.5 inches, whatever, I don't care. The reason why it's 3.5 inches is because you can hold it with your thumb, you can manipulate it with one hand. And for a designer, like, I don't want to call myself a designer, but I know a little bit about design, I'm interested in
you
it.
Went to you briefly at least were in school for
human-computer interaction. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I
in case people don't know this, this is something you went to school for.
Yeah. Something I went to school or was very passionate about in my past. And that's what I'm saying. That's to go back to what I was saying before about the comic, was that Zach Wiener-Smith was saying, you have these periods in your life where you're going to become really obsessed with, say, sushi or design or whatever it is, and you can work really hard to become an expert in that thing, and then you can drop it and you can become an expert in something else. Is it really, if you really wanted to, you could become a lawyer, a doctor, an astrophysicist. You could do all those things in one lifetime if you really spent each of your, you know, sub lives, or, you know, denominate your 8-9 years of your life, each of those cycles doing that thing and becoming dedicated in that way. What people don't realize is that it's not as simple as saying at the beginning of the 8 years, I'm going to become a writer, because that's something I said to myself probably about 8 years ago. I want to become a writer, and I'm not an expert at writing 8 years later. And part of the reason why is because I fucking had lots of shit, you know, whatever that got in my way. Also because I went to school for fucking economics, and that didn't really add into that. I becoming somewhat all right, getting a BA in economics didn't help me become a better writer. I mean, I guess maybe it did, but it's not helping me become an expert.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between somebody like Jiro, anybody, any expert you can think of. They really dedicated themselves in such a way that they were constantly putting their permanent self over their experiencing self. And that's something I've become. I think that's the real root of my obsession, is that I'm really pissed off with my experiencing self. Because my experiencing self is like, ah, fuck it, let's go drink a beer and go watch TV and go, like, you know, over the couple of last days, I've been watching fucking the fourth season of Breaking Bad, catching up on that. Because my experiencing self likes that. Sit on the couch, play with the laptop, watch Breaking Bad. It's easy, it's fun, you know, whatever.
It's easy and fun, but at least Breaking Bad is art without any question. Like, that is. Yes, it's television, but it's still, you are appreciating art. It's going to enrich you as a person. It's not like you're watching Charles and Tiaras.
That's what I'm saying my new baseline is that if I'm going to sit somewhere and I'm going to passively watch something, I want it to be Jiro Dreams of Sushi. I want it to be Breaking Bad. I want, because there's so much good shit out there. In the same way, with, like, we're talking about food, to go back to what you're saying about LA or Just for Laughs or any of these things, if you have the possibility at, say, Just for Laughs or Fantasia to go see a movie, comic, eat food, and you actively go out of your way to just randomly pick something, like, I don't care, whatever. I think, I've been trying to, like, apply this to all the things that have been happening over the summer, and there was a while back, in the terms of internet controversy, there was the Daniel Tosh yelling at some girl about how she should get raped or whatever, the whole Daniel Tosh rape thing that we probably, I believe, even possibly talked about on a previous podcast.
Which that might be one of the dead podcasts that we scrapped.
Yeah, that probably ended up as a dead podcast for a lot of good reasons. Really, I think what bothered me most about that, looking back on it, is not the whole fucking feminism side of it, and I'm very pro-feminism, but it's really that girl went to a club and had no idea who she was going to see.
Yeah.
And didn't really care.
To bring it back to Jiro, because we're running out of time, I need to know, because really, whenever people watch the movie, a comment I hear a lot is, oh, I really feel bad about the oldest son.
I don't. Totally don't.
High five. High five. I agree. What is your thoughts? I would like to hear. I mean, I think we were going to say the same thing ultimately, but let's hear. You're the more eloquent of us two of us. So go for it.
I wouldn't go that far to say when I speak I'm eloquent, but thank you. it's a lot better than before, where you're saying that my summer was way more boring than yours. Which is true.
To be fair, it was. I had an awesome summer. Come on.
You did. Your summer kicked my summer's ass, I know. But anyways, I the reason I'm okay with that is, number one, because his son is getting something that I've sort of always wanted, which is that I've always wanted – my dad is an electrician, and my dad totally does not understand what I want to do with my life and does not understand why I would want to do things. Not to rag on them in sort of a public forum, but my – extended family, some of my extended family and some of my more immediate family might ask me why I read a book. Not as in what kind of book are you reading, but why would you ever read a book? Why would you do that? My obsession with becoming a better person, my obsession with polymaths is totally lost on the people in my family. The idea that I could be somebody like that, you know, especially because my dad is that guy. My dad gets up every day. My dad is a fantastic electrician. He is really good at what he does. I wouldn't say he's an expert. I don't know. He's definitely up there, especially because he's really well respected in his community. He gets up every day and he tries to knock that shit out of the park. That's what he does. I mean, my dad was the guy that was wiring fucking, you know, Bill Parcells' house, you know? So, I mean, like, he's good at what he does. It just fucking, I try to explain to him that I want to work with someone. I really wish I'd come from that sort of background. I really wish that – I know that it's because it's Japan and there's cultural norms there that the reason his son is working for him is because that's what you do. The oldest son that takes over for the father in his business. And in that sort of sense, I might be taking over my father as an electrician, which will never fucking happen. But if that's what I really – if I really want to live in that culture, that's what I'd be doing. You get to learn from someone who is a fucking master at what they do. And if you're really passionate about it, if you're really interested in it, that's fucking awesome. And what people don't seem to realize from watching the documentary or sort of maybe digging into a little bit more about the man himself, Jiro isn't really there. I mean, he's in his 80s. He's 87. Yeah. Dude's 87 years old. He is mostly leaving everything already to his son. It's just
It ends with the first time the Michelin guys were there, it was the oldest son cooking for them. Preparing for them, whatever word you want to use.
This is a guy. His son. His son.
He gets no credit, which I think is. I think he gets because he gets no credit that everyone. Really, I think it's people applying Western values onto a non-Western person. Ultimately.
Yeah. But the thing is that even in Western values, and I know this is sounds kind of sad. At least it's kind of sad for me. The main thing I want in my life is not really to get a bunch of random people to come into my restaurant and say, hey, you make a good piece of fish, especially because you actually get to see the people who come to his restaurant and they're very affluent and they don't know who he is, really. The food critic is sitting there being like, this is who this guy is. And it's like, fucking, you're paying $300 a person and you don't know who this guy is? You fucking retarded? Like, what the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah, their view is we want to make the best possible. As opposed to getting famous for it, which is a very Western thing.
But the thing is that not even just that you get you want to become the best possible, but if I was looking for critical acclaim, I would be looking for critical acclaim from the fucking food critic in there. The food critic who really knows what he's talking about. The guy that says, oh, I'm nervous every time I go to see him because his food is just above and beyond everything. And more importantly, I'd be looking for approval from my father. If I was Jiro's son, I would be looking to Jiro to say, you have nothing to worry about. When I pass on, when I'm dead, you are going to do all of this just as well as I've done it.
That's clear.
That would be the greatest praise you could ever get in your life. And it's so clear, too. Yeah, so fucking, I mean, I know the guy is, that dude seems like he's very modest and quiet, and he's sort of living in this shadow.
But he's Japanese. That's not uncommon in Japan,
Yeah. Well, it's not uncommon, but also the fact that, like, you don't know that guy's interior monologue. The pleasure that must come from both your father and this expert in your field looking at you and saying that you are good enough to take over for him, or at least maybe not implicitly saying that,
does basically explicitly say it. He does send him to the fish market, which is the most important part of the day, basically.
Okay.
And that is giving a hell of a lot of trust, really, to him. Yes. And Jiro says repeatedly that he just knows he's basically a taster at this point. Everyone else does the actual work.
Yeah. And that's got to be – I don't feel at all bad for his son. I really don't. I mean, I hope the best for him, all that. But, I mean, really, that's the thing. I think when people say that, it kind of bothers me a little bit because it's that moment of where – like, why are you looking for validation from strangers? Why are you looking for validation for these people who don't know what the hell they're talking about? That's really, I mean, because that's the thing to tie in and kind of close up this whole thread about the polymaths and experts and things like that. If you became an expert in a field, do you think Neil deGrasse Tyson or Carl Sagan or I don't know. I'm trying to think like other people, like people that are normally banded about as like experts and geniuses and gods, I guess.
Social media experts drive me fucking crazy.
But I would say that what Neil deGrasse Tyson does is extremely important. And
Neil deGrasse Tyson is very that's not.
Or if people or whatever people are like, oh god, it's Bill Nye, you know, Bill Nye the science guy. He's so important to everything. I agree, he's important. But if you really think that Bill Nye looks to his audience for validation on some level, I'm sure he does. But I really don't think he fucking cares so much about what some random person that, you know, doesn't know that the sun is bigger than the moon cares about what he has to say. It doesn't matter in terms of that person. I think that when you're somebody like Neil deGrasse Tyson, I think Neil deGrasse Tyson does what he does more for science and more for scientists than for the average person. he's trying to educate the average person, mm-hmm. but I don't imagine he's doing it for the average person. And I don't think that Jiro is making sushi for the average person. I think he's making
sushi. Jiro's definitely not. He's doing it for himself. There's no question. Like, he wants to be better. It's his goal is to be better. Everything else is secondary. He just wants to be the best chef possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is so fucking admirable. I wish I could say I was that. But I can't. Like, I'm not that guy. I wish I was. I wish I was that guy with that drive to be the best I could be. But I'm not. I'm a good guy. I'm a guy that wants to be a better person. But I'm not striving to be an expert in anything, really.
But it's not.
And I feel like I should.
I know this is kind of stupid to say, but it's not easy.
No, I know.
It really isn't. I mean, that's why I use the word obsession, is because over the summer, I have become obsessed with this idea of becoming better at these things. And how can I become an expert? How can I become just unbelievably better than the average person at this one thing? And it's not just as simple as saying that I want to become better at sushi. Because that's another thing, too. I wouldn't go so far as to say that he's a polymath, but I would say that he's definitely someone who's an expert in sushi.
Oh, no question.
Which is an expert in fish and rice and chemistry and cooking and all sorts of other sub things that he's had to master over the years. He's had to master multiple things over the years to get to where he is. And I think that just because you can slap a job title on him and say he's a chef, I think it's really selling him short. I think there's a lot more there.
I don't know, I think of polymath as sort of horizontal integration as opposed to vertical integration, if you know what I mean. Like, it's...
Yes, I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't know. It's just... Not that he's not. I don't want to diminish him in any way, but I just... I wouldn't think of him as a polymath because all of those things build on each other as opposed to multidisciplinary.
Yeah, yeah, that's all. I'm not too super interested in vertical, more into horizontal, because I think that was what would make me a better writer. Because like I was talking about with Douglas Adams, I think that Douglas Adams was a horizontal person.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, whatever.
So that was our summers and Euro Dreams of Sushi.
So yeah, I guess if you want to talk to us more about this, find us on Twitter at Joey Heflick, and
I'm at Gobo, Gobo.
And your name is Ryan.
We said at the beginning, everyone knows who I am.
I hope so.
All right. If not, I'm Ryan. I'm from Montreal. My turn-ons include
long walks on the beach and boats covered in chocolate.
Yeah. All right.
Well, until next time, thanks for listening, Internet Boyfriends. We love you all. See you hopefully next week.
Take care.